This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick. 12 years ago this week, a jury acquitted four white Los Angeles policemen of assaulting black motorist Rodney King. That set off riots and looting and urban chaos.
Like a living hell, it's a war zone. I've never seen anything like this before in my life. Never.
After 3 days of violence, 58 people were dead. More than $1 billion in property had been destroyed. But the chaos had an unlikely fringe benefit. Los Angeles's warring black gangs, often responsible for horrifically high body counts, vowed to try to stop killing each other. They declared a truce. Today, the truce has dissolved in most places, but not in the city's Watts neighborhood. Day to Day's Karen Grigsby Bates has this report on a man who's fighting to keep the peace in his part of the city.
Watts is 1 square mile within the city of Los Angeles. It's an intimate community filled with storefront churches and small pastel bungalows, many with iron security gates on the windows and doors. Watts became famous in 1965 when riots there, sparked by police brutality, put the neighborhood on the map. After the Rodney King riots in 1992, black gang members across the city declared a truce to end the violence that had consumed them for years. Akilah Shirelles, born and raised in Watts, was one of the architects of that gang truce. Akilah, everyone knows him by his first name, grew up in the Jordan Downs Projects and was 12 when he became a member of the 102nd Street School Crips. He says back then gangbanging was a rite of passage, something young guys did. But they did it without guns. When guns entered the picture in the mid-1980s, Akilah reconsidered gangbanging.
When I was in the 9th grade, you know, one of my really good friends was shot in the head at school on campus. You know, that really began to kind of like shift my whole perception, because prior to that, we considered our generation the last of the head-up generation. After that, you know, people were playing for keeps, meaning that you could lose your life behind gangbanging.
Over the years, Akilah and his friends watched with increasing dismay as gang fatalities rose and people they all knew fell victims to it. Before the 1992 riots, several members of Akilah's gang, the Crips, and their rivals, the Bloods, had begun holding tentative talks, feeling out the notion of making peace. After the riots exploded, the gangs felt even more urgency. With the help of former Football Hall of Famer Jim Brown, a truce was established in the spring of 1992. Figures from the L.A. County Sheriff's Department confirm gang homicides declined for most of the 90s, although not everyone credits the truce. In his downtown office, Police Chief William Bratton is skeptical about the truce's success or even its existence.
I haven't seen any evidence of it. They seem to be killing each other with the same rapidity over there as they are anyplace else in the city. So this idea that they have a truce, one of the problems that the gangs have in effectuating such an accommodation is that they have really so little control over their individual members.
That control is impossible, says Bratton, because unlike other criminal organizations, LA gangs don't have a distinct chain of command, and the carnage is not strictly business.
A lot of their violence has moved beyond that control to personal violence. It's, in many respects, it's all about payback.
Akilah agrees that a simple command to stop the violence isn't going to end it. Nor will everyone buy into the idea that war is over.
Just because you decide that you're going to stop gangbanging doesn't mean that your enemy is going to forgive you.
And gang members and the police still see themselves at war with each other. Bill Bratton says he's applying what he calls the 10% solution to gang policing in L.A., focusing his comparatively small police force's energies on the gang members who've proven to be most violent. But with everyone dressing the same, from suburban wannabes to true homies, Bratton says it's difficult to tell good kids from violent gang members.
Unfortunately, we've got a pretty stupid culture in this country which tends to use these characters as role models in terms of whether it's music or clothes or style of action. And as a result, many of our good, decent kids, out of sheer foolishness and stupidity, allow themselves to have these people as role models. So it makes the job of the police that much more difficult.
Akilah Shirelles says often what separates the two kinds of kids is economic opportunity. Through the Community Self-Determination Institute, the organization he started in a small Watts storefront in 1999, Akilah continues to seek alternatives for young men like Slim, who used to be a teacher's aide until government cutbacks cost him his job. Slim's at the Institute, working to keep young people out of gangs. He's riled by the persistence of insulting stereotypes about his neighborhood and the people who live there.
Tramps, hustlers, gangbanging, you know. Like, we just a pot of negative gumbo.
Slim's friend Chewy says the people in Watts are often underestimated.
We not like that. You got, like they say, you got a lot of intelligent people in Watts. They just don't see it.
Slim, Chewy, and their quiet friend BJ are part of the crew of young men who come to the Institute to work with Akila, trying to break the cycle of gang violence that has prevented Watts and other low-income neighborhoods from moving forward. It's often that frustration over lack of economic opportunity that contributes to conflict within the community. When conflicts do occur, Akila brings the feuding parties to the Institute to talk out their differences in a weapons-free environment. He's found that people are often relieved when things don't escalate into violence.
Believe me, they want somebody to intervene in a situation. They want somebody to. But the thing is that you have to know how to communicate the message. You have to know how to be able to bring balance to the conversation so that nobody feels, you know, one up over the next person, you know? You have to really get individuals to take responsibility for what it is that they've contributed to the conflict. When you can get those individuals to do that, then they can both save face in the situation.
And saving face can save lives, since lots of gang homicides occur after someone feels they've been disrespected. That tension makes peacemaking risky, Akila warns.
People see peace as this weak, sorry, flimsy thing, you know, that it has no strength and no integrity. Man, peace is extremely dangerous work, man. You know, because even the peacemakers lose their life in the process of waging peace. And, you know, we're gonna lose a lot of people in the process, you know, and sometime including our own.
That prediction became sadly accurate when Akila's oldest child, Terrell, was killed in early January. The 19-year-old college freshman was home for the holidays and went to a friend's party in a fancy part of town. When gang members attempted to join the party, they were turned away. They fired shots in retaliation, and one of them hit Terrell. The boy, whose dad had managed to keep him away from gangs, ended up dying a gang-related death. Akila refuses to be defeated by his son's murder and is inspired to press forward. He hopes his work will save not only young men like his son, but young men like the gang member who killed him.
I have this belief that, you know, that when the body dies, you know, the body releases an energy that can be harnessed to either do good or bad. And we're harnessing the energy of Terrell to do good. So it's not so much about, you know, who killed him, like, you know, the so-called gang member who took my son's life. It's about the what's that's killing our children, because I really believe that that young man who took my son's life is a victim also.
So Akila Shirelles keeps working on resolving one conflict at a time, hoping the Watts peace will continue to hold. For Day to Day, I'm Karen Grigsby Bates.